The next case is number 041423, Thauber against Experian Information Solutions Incorporated.
Thank you. My name is Larry Smith. I represent the plaintiff and appellant in this action, Lloyd Thauber. The Fair Credit Reporting Act, enacted by Congress to assist consumers with issues with respect to their credit reports and errors that persist on them, enacted Section 1681E, subsection B, which states that whenever a credit reporting agency, such as Experian in this case, prepares a consumer report, they must follow reasonable procedures to assure maximum possible accuracy. And those are the three key words, maximum possible accuracy. In this case, Experian prepared a report to a Monogram Credit Card Bank of Georgia when Lloyd Thauber applied for them for a credit card. And in that report, it included a cross-country bank account that was in bankruptcy. The account did not have an extraordinarily high balance, and it was the only account reported in bankruptcy. There was no public record.
How do you have an account in bankruptcy?
Well, if somebody files bankruptcy and includes those accounts as those which they want to discharge, it would be reported in bankruptcy on one's credit report.
Discharge debts, you don't discharge accounts.
Well, it would have been a debt, yes. This particular account, which was a debt, was being reported as having been claimed in bankruptcy. However, nowhere on this report was there a public record of bankruptcy. No other account of the other accounts and other debts on his credit report were they reported in bankruptcy. In fact, what we learn in the briefs of this case is that a gentleman with the same name as my client residing in Connecticut filed bankruptcy. I should go on to tell you that in the many addresses that they report of Mr. Thauber, who lives in Mercer, Illinois, none of the addresses match up to a Connecticut address as well. So the only blip of data on this report that suggested any bankruptcy at all was this one trade line from Cross Country Bank. Experian argues that they had no notice whatsoever that there was an inaccuracy in this credit report and therefore should not be liable under the Section E, subsection B, which requires them to maintain reasonable procedures to assure maximum accuracy when they put this report out. In other words, essentially, Experian is asking for a freebie when they put out a report. They put out a report that is patently erroneous and claim that they have no notice whatsoever that there's this error on it that sticks out and that they should not be held liable for the damages that flow from it. Courts from other circuits, the Fifth Circuit and the Eleventh Circuit, suggest that the creation of a credit report requires more than just simply putting the data on a piece of paper. When a credit reporting agency prepares a report, it is continuing.
You're almost arguing for some kind of strict liability here, aren't you?
As a matter of fact, I'm not. I'm not arguing that they are strictly responsible for every credit report that.
Well, apparently, here there was somebody with the same name who did have a bankruptcy.
There was somebody with the same name who lived in Connecticut and, quite frankly, I don't know if he ever had a cross-country bank credit card, but he did file bankruptcy. And this bit of information appeared on one trade line of my client Mr. Sarver's credit report, who lives here in Illinois and has never lived in Connecticut.
Well, he complained about it. They asked for some more information.
Well, I will get into the aspect where he complained about it, but I want to answer your question regarding the strict liability. We're not asking for that. There's obviously scenarios where Experian wouldn't know the information that they're putting out is incorrect. For instance, updated payment information. Maybe Experian didn't know that a payment was made when in fact, they were reporting that it had not been made. There's also certain instances where identity theft may have occurred, and nobody really knew that happened until the report was actually pulled, and it was seen that there were things on there. But this is a little bit different. This is an instance where a report comes out, and there's a one bit of data that is just an absolute anomaly of everything else. And in the preparation of this report, they were to use all reasonable procedures to assure maximum accuracy. The district court in this case, the opinion by the district court, by Judge Bucklow, reduced their decision on Section EB to a footnote by saying that because Experian complied with the investigation requirements under a different section, Section 1681IA, then they automatically have complied with Section 1681EB, which it doesn't make sense. They're different sections in the statutory scheme. They have different standards, and the compliance with one should not be the compliance with another.
Well, what would be the motivation for an agency that collects credit information to knowingly put false information in there?
Well, it's not that they're knowingly putting the false information on there. How the information hooks up to my client's credit report remains to be seen. The problem that the knowing issue here is that they knowingly did not review this credit report that had a sore thumb sticking out, an anomaly of it, and literally took a credit report or prepared this report, sent it to a potential creditor that had information that did not make sense. It would make sense if Lloyd Sarver here in Marseille, Illinois, had filed for bankruptcy at some point. It would make some sense if there was a public record reported that he did. It might even make sense if at some point Lloyd Sarver from Marseille, Illinois, also was reported to have lived at some point in his life in Connecticut. But nothing here matched up. There was no sense whatsoever for this information to appear on his credit report. And the knowing violation here, and Your Honor, they can be held liable for a negligent violation. It could be a matter of their negligence, because that's what reasonableness is about. And it is a question of fact for a fact finder. And for some reason, the district court in this instance determined that it wasn't even worthy of being written about in the opinion. It should be reduced to a footnote. But the violation being that there was no procedure at all in place to assure that the report made sense. When this information was put out...
In other words, you think they have an obligation to inspect all the people whose reports they have and try to determine if there's any anomalous information on any of them.
The obligation, Your Honor, is ongoing when they put a report out to assure maximum accuracy when they prepare...
I'm asking a specific... I mean, you're saying having an anomaly in a report is something that they ought to be able to detect and correct without it being pointed out by some outside person.
Well, when they're preparing when they're preparing the report, and they put this information on the piece of paper because somebody's buying it from them and they're selling it to a company such as Monogram Credit Card in this instance.
Well, do we have any evidence here that whether that's reasonable or unreasonable? Has anyone put any evidence in about whether they ought to have such an obligation? You're asserting that they ought to have it, but I have no idea how reasonable such an obligation would be.
Well, some circuits have suggested that once the incorrect report is pointed out...
Well, that's a different story, though.
Once it's pointed out, the burden should then shift to Experian to show that they did utilize reasonable procedures. And no, they did not present any evidence that they utilized reasonable procedures. Instead, they shifted the blame to Cross Country and said, we don't know why they did this, when the fact of the matter is there's no evidence that Cross Country, in fact, did this, and it wasn't Experian. I see them. I have some time left for my rebuttal, and if there are no questions regarding what I've spoken of, I'd like to save some time for that.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We'll hear now from Mr. Bromberg.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Judge Cudahy, I think you put your finger on one of the chief problems with the plaintiff's case, and that there is no evidence in the record of the unreasonableness of Experian's procedures. Now, there is, contrary to counsel's representation, substantial evidence of the reasonableness of the procedures. That is contained in the affidavit of Kimberly Hughes, which shows that Experian has procedures in place to ensure that the data that it receives from its credit grantors is accurate and reliable. Now, this is basically the procedure that this court said was reasonable in the Henson case. Now, the Henson case dealt with public records, but that basic procedure has been approved by the FTC in the commentary that we cited to the court. And I think it's well worth reading that commentary because it bears directly on what occurred in this case. It starts off by saying the section does not require error-free consumer reports. And then it goes on to say, if a consumer reporting agency accurately transcribes, stores, and communicates consumer information received from a source that it reasonably believes to be reputable and which is credible on its face, the agency does not violate this section simply by reporting an item of information that turns out to be inaccurate. Then it goes on to say that when the agency has notice of systematic errors, it needs to put into place procedures to deal with that. Now, what's clear from this is that the FTC and Congress recognize that errors will creep in to the credit reporting system. To design a system which is perfect and doesn't allow any errors would require huge expenses for verification. It would slow down the system considerably, and the upshot would be that consumers would have to pay more for their credit. Congress decided to create a balance. That's why it requires reasonable procedures. And here again, I would disagree with counsel for the plaintiff. The key passage in Section 607B is the requirement of reasonableness, not of maximum possible accuracy. Now, going back to the
Mr. Smith's argument seems to be that this report of the bankruptcy, the account in bankruptcy, that's something I still don't understand, but it's so anomalous in terms of the rest of the report that it stuck out like a sore thumb and so forth.
Well, Your Honor,
what's your comment on that?
A couple of responses to that. First is the question of whether or not Experian had any notice of this type of error. Because, again, what the FTC has said is it needs to correct systematic errors, not review each and every report to determine whether there's something that sticks out like a sore thumb and needs to be could be corrected with further investigation. Experian alone issues over 500 million reports a year. That's more than 2 million reports each business day. It simply could not efficiently and effectively review each and every one of those reports for sore thumbs, investigate that, and correct it consistent with Congress's goal of providing cost-effective and efficient credit reporting. Now, plaintiff also did not address the question of causation and damages, which we would submit is another reason why the claims in this case were properly dismissed. Now, it's important to understand the nature of the error here. Plaintiff contends correctly that there was a mistake in his credit reports in the summer of 2002. They indicated that the cross-country bank accounts, which were for credit cards, approximately $2,700 in debt, indicated a discharge in bankruptcy. They don't contend, or plaintiff does not contend, that he actually paid that $2,700. What he contends is that he wasn't in bankruptcy, and therefore the trade line should have read as it does in the February 2003 credit report, which is in the record, that this account was unpaid and written off by the bank. Now, plaintiff contends that this error caused the Monogram Bank in early August of 2002 to deny him credit. That claim that he would have received credit is belied by his credit report, which is in the record. It's Exhibit 4 to our appendix below. And if you look at that report, what you'll see is that there were 7 entries. 5 of those entries contained adverse information. They show that there was over $7,000 worth of unpaid debt. 3 of those entries, the 2 cross-country entries, and the entry for Providian, dealt with credit cards. There was $3,000 in unpaid debt from Providian and $2,700 of unpaid debt from cross-country. Now, as opposed to this $7,000 of unpaid debt, $5,700 of which were from credit cards, there were only 2 positive entries in the credit report, and they were for relatively small amounts. One was, I think, for $150, the other was for approximately $250. Now, I would submit to the court that no reasonable credit card company would have granted a new card to an individual who had a credit history showing only a few very small timely payments and significant arrears on credit card accounts. Now, plaintiff ignores that evidence in their brief. They rely instead upon the credit denial letter that was issued by the Monogram Bank. And they ask this court to find that a reasonable jury could have found a negative pregnant in that and inferred that there was causation. But a reasonable jury could not have ignored the evidence of the credit history. And here I think the Supreme Court's decision in Matsushita is very crucial, because that's a case where the plaintiffs presented considerable evidence in support of, I think, a predatory pricing claim. But the Supreme Court said, you haven't shown that this is an economically reasonable thing for the plaintiff to have done. And we are not going to assume that economic actors engage in economically irrational activity on summary judgment. I would submit for that very same reason the plaintiff's claims here are insufficient. Now I see that my time is about over. I'd just like to say very quickly with respect to emotional distress, the fact that there is an incorrect entry in a credit report, even one suggesting bankruptcy, doesn't rise to the high level that this court has required in cases like Ballestieri, Nicolny, and Biggs. And with respect to the reinvestigation, it was perfectly reasonable for Experian to require identification information. It would not have imposed a significant burden upon the consumer, and it would have dealt with the serious problems of mixed files and identity theft. Your Honor, if there are no further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bromberg.
First, I'd like to comment on counsel's remark that they put out 5 million reports. I believe he said it was 5 million reports a week. I hope I didn't misspeak upon that. And what they're asking for then is, in the many reports that they put out that have incorrections, they're allowed a freebie. And that if somebody were to get denied credit because of something that is patently erroneous, they get away with it. That flies in the face of Section 1681EB. What they're looking for is their savior under Section 1681I, where they're entitled to investigate and conduct a reasonable investigation, and then thereafter, if there are damages suffered, then they would be held responsible for them. But Section 1681EB comes before I in the statutory scheme and provides that they have to, when they prepare the report, it shall be done with reasonable, to assure maximum possible accuracy. And that's where they failed in this regard. Do they have to have somebody sitting there reading every report? They have to have whoever prepared the report make sure that the report makes sense, at least some sense, and something doesn't stick out that does not belong there, such as it did in this instance. Which leads me to the issue of damages. An error that the court committed in this case was that they said that the damages started at the time that Mr. Sarver then notified and wrote a letter to Experian. That is incorrect. Under Section 1681EB, damages are calculated at the time they put out the erroneous report, and that was when they put that report out to Monogram Credit Card Bank of Georgia that said that Mr. Sarver was in bankruptcy. Now, counsel went through some length of discussing Mr. Sarver's credit report and how it had some other derogatory remarks that were accurate. However, in the record is the letter from Monogram Credit Card, and it's also cited in the briefs, that the one sole factor that they actually took the time to enumerate was the bankruptcy. Given the opportunity to notify Mr. Sarver of all the problems that might have caused him this loss of credit, they took the time to say just this one thing, the bankruptcy, is what the main factor was. And under the substantial factor test enumerated by the circuits, that would be enough to satisfy his damage requirement, and he is entitled to recover the damages that he suffered from that credit denial because Experian did not use reasonable procedures to maintain maximum possible accuracy.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both Mr. Smith and Mr. Bromberg, and the case will be taken under advisement.